Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Beyond Surviving, the safe space for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to receive support, resources, and share their stories. Beyond Surviving is about freedom, healing, connection, and even laughter and fun. Most importantly, it's about letting go of the pain of abuse and finally moving on. I'm Rachel Grant, and for those of you who don't yet know me, I've been a sexual abuse recovery coach since 2007, and am the author of Beyond Surviving, The Final Stage of Recovery from Sexual Abuse. I work with survivors who are sick and tired of feeling broken and unfixable, and I help them let go of the pain of abuse and move on with their lives. You can learn more about me and the Beyond Surviving program at rachelgrantcoaching.com. In this week's episode, we conclude our conversation with Anne Cuthbert, creator of the Food Freedom Program, as she continues to share with us amazing steps that we can take to overcome food and weight obsession.
All right, step three.
So step three is to eat without distractions. And this can bring up a lot of stuff for people. So let me tell you the how-to of it, and it's pretty much as it sounds. You know, just to eat mindfully, to pay attention to what you're eating. Let the book wait for later. Don't watch TV or work, anything. No distractions at all. Just sit, and even at the table, and some of my clients have set up, you know, candles and really treated themselves to a meal that's about them. So it's about you and enjoying the food. You know, if you're going to eat what you want and eat what your body says, hey, this sounds delicious, then it's really important to enjoy every bite. Mm-hmm. And it's also, sometimes you'll find you're not liking it. And then it's like, you know, I don't want to eat this. This doesn't taste good. And so you're honoring what you want and getting that. So that it's a self-care thing. It's putting yourself first. I'll try to be brief about this funny story, but I was at a restaurant and I was trying to choose between two items and I asked the waitress, which one's better? And she said, oh, don't get that one. That one's terrible. Nobody likes it. Well, it is the one I wanted. My body was saying, that's the one I want. So I ordered it anyway. And she was right. It was terrible. No, it's why do they even have this on the menu? But I asked for something else. I said, you're right. This is terrible. I don't want it. Can I have that other thing? And they did. And it was hard. You know, I just say, hey, I'm worth eating what I want and what tastes good. Mm-hmm. And she honored that and didn't even complain about it. So it's really important to eat what you want. People who overeat will eat things that they don't even like. Hmm. So the other important aspect to this is about, you know, well, how many of you, and you can't really answer because you're on mute, but just notice, have you ever eaten food and then after eating kind of felt totally unsatisfied and you start looking for something else? I want something else. Or,
yeah.
You know, there's even a feeling of, did I even eat? You don't even really remember eating. And that's because of this step. When you're watching TV or reading, you're not paying attention to what you're eating. And so in a way, your body is like, I never got anything. I never got the satisfaction. And food is delicious. So mm-hmm. It's important that we feel satisfied by it. And emotionally as well. There's nothing wrong with being emotionally satisfied by food. So when you eat without distractions, you get to have the food. Your body gets to have it. And that's where it helps you to feel satisfied and not want to just keep eating.
Keep going. Well, I have to say, and this would be a tough one for me. I think I'm going to get stuck mm-hmm. at step three for a while. Because I love, like, sitting down for a good movie with my dinner and, you know, watching the show and eating my meal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yes. And I would guess for you and anybody else who's feeling the same way, that it comes down to loneliness.
Hmm. Wanting to have something
yes.
around, so it's not just...
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. As well as, you know, any beliefs that you have about, you know, yourself. You know, when we don't spend a lot of time just with ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, or just sitting and doing nothing. But doing nothing and being with ourselves is how we learn how we feel or those feelings start to surface.
Mm-hmm. I think
also,
for me too, like I really grew up that way. I really grew up like family sitting in front of the TV eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways it's a little bit, like that's how I remember being a part of a family
yeah.
or being connected.
Yeah.
So it's one of those bad habits, right, that I'm going to get the opportunity to challenge now and really take
yes.
on. Seeing how it's different for me if I do something different, yeah.
Absolutely. And I imagine, you may not know it, but I imagine you felt lonely as a kid in that situation.
And you're good. Look at you being good. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So doing this, I had a client who did this, and she really felt that loneliness, but she sat at the table with her dinner, you know, night after night, and felt the loneliness, and it didn't take too long before it really started to lessen a lot. Because when you feel your feelings, they get relief. That's all they want, is to be noticed and recognized and felt. And so it totally changed that for her. She felt less lonely, more connected, and satisfied, too, with her food.
I like that. So, yeah, and again, just noticing that anytime you're resisting or you have one of these habits where you're either – you know, judging food as good or bad, or you're
mm-hmm.
eating when you're not hungry, or eating way past the point when you're full, or you're constantly eating and doing something else, that
yes.
to notice what that behavior is helping you avoid feeling
mm-hmm.
or dealing with. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and these are all about paying attention to your body and what's happening there. You know, you're practicing by doing it with, am I hungry or not? But your emotions are all in your body, too. So by doing that, you're practicing connecting with your body and what your body has to tell you about how you feel as well as whether or not you're hungry.
Yeah, I like it. All right,
so,
step four.
So step four is to put on your plate only what you'll eat. And so what this is about is you're preparing food, and, you know, if you're single like me, then you just prepare as much as you're going to eat. And if you're in a family situation or with more people, then, you know, the food's out there, and you check in with your body. How hungry am I? You know, just all the things we've talked about, Helen and I, how much do I need right now? How much does my body need right now? And serving up what you want. So if there's a dish that you don't really want, then don't eat that one. You know, give yourself more of what you do want. And then that's it. That's your meal for the night.
Okay.
And
so this is a circumstance where you're at, like, the party and there's, like, the buffet table. So you're recommending that you get, like, one plate and you go and you pick up how much and what you want. And then the buffet table is no longer you just stay away from that the rest of the night? Or I guess if you're in step one, you go back anyway? How does can you just explain that a little more to me?
Yeah, sure, definitely. Thank you. It's with all meals, even when you're, you know, the buffet at your own dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And or just exactly what you said. Because, and the reason why is because, one, you know, I imagine some of you have the experience of going back for seconds often. And so it's not about denying yourself food. It's what it's about is that feeling that happens when I can't go back for more.
Hmm.
Because emotionally what this translates into is a fear of not having enough.
Right.
So right now it feels like I won't have enough food. What if this isn't enough? What if I'm still hungry? And for me, I experienced a lot of fear around this, and I was like, what's going on? It's just food. I'll have another meal, you know, later. What's going on? And what's going on is you're afraid of not having enough love or enough attention, enough money, security, those types of things. Because you have enough food.
Mm.
You can put as much on your plate as you want or need. There will be another meal. There's plenty of food
right.
in the house. It's not food that you don't have enough of.
So this is really about starting to look at where you're feeling lack in your life.
Yes. Yeah. And where that comes from with childhood.
Mm.
And yeah, a lot of my clients will talk about, you know, food is their friend. And it's the only way that they treat themselves, that they get time by themselves, you know, that they have. So there's a lack of comfort or support or love.
Yeah.
So when you want to go back for more and you have that feeling, instead sit with that feeling. And, you know, this is not about food. What is this about?
Mm-hmm.
Where does this familiar?
Mm-hmm. I love that, Anne. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And can you also speak to, because I know one of the things that people might be wondering about and dealing with that I certainly bump up against is I'll get my plate of food, like in a restaurant, you know, I'll order my meal. And we all know, like, restaurant portions these days are just, some places they're just really out of control. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the, you know, if it's on your plate, you eat it mentality, right?
Yeah.
The clean your plate mentality, I guess we'll call it. And so, you know, one of the things I've started to do is ask for a to-go box right at the beginning. And I just kick out as much of it as I think, okay, once I have what's left on my plate, actually looks like what I want. But I still see that. Like, I still see those moments where it's like, I'm actually kind of full. And this may just go back to your other bit, but I'm feeling a little conflicted between the eat what's on your plate and the stop when you're full if you have a little bit of this clean your plate upbringing or mentality. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're checking in with your body and it's like, okay, I'm full, then absolutely right. Anything that's left over, it's like, okay, I'm going to take that to go. And I love that you gave that example, too, because a lot of times I think people forget that you can eat it later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always tell people the freezer is your friend, you know, I used to freeze cake slices, you know, so that I could pop in the microwave whatever I wanted, a piece of cake.
Nice.
And so it's there later. It's always there for later. So that was great. And if that's something that you have going on, what I would suggest is to always leave something on your plate. because that's going to bring up any of those feelings that came from that, or, you know, those triggers. And even if it's a pee, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be a lot. You know, if you're hungry, eat it, but leave a pee on your plate and see what feelings that triggers. And the great question to ask all the time is, if it's not about food, what is it about? If I'm having feeling and I think it's about food, it's not about food, okay, what is going on? What am I feeling? Is this familiar?
I love that. I hope everybody got that. Yeah, if it's not about food, what is going on? If it can't be about food, what else could it be? Yeah.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Brilliant. All right. What is step five?
Wait, so step five and six are, and seven a little bit, but step five and six are the body image steps. So, you know, body image and food issues just go together. And when you work on your issues with food, it will definitely improve body image. But keep in mind, body image tends to be a bit harder to, you know, like the food stuff comes first. Usually the body image stuff comes later. Mm-hmm. Because our culture is so critical discriminatory against body sizes. And so there's a lot of feelings around that. But work on the food issues. That'll help with the body image issue. Because you can imagine, I mean, if you're no longer binging, you're going to feel better about your body.
Yeah.
And there are some things that are really important when treating your body well and feeling good in your body. And the most important thing is to only wear clothes that you love and that fit. Mm. It's so common for women to wear clothes that don't fit, that are, and usually too small. There's this belief in our culture that if we beat ourselves up enough, we'll want to change. And this couldn't be further from the truth. It doesn't work. So I think that's why women do it. One, you know, there's this feeling like, well, if I need a bigger clothes, then, you know, I'm bad and I'm wrong and sad, and, you know, all those feelings that go with that we talked about. And so they think that, well, if I keep wearing these pair of pants that are too small, then it'll motivate me to lose weight.
Ah, right.
And that,
we
and
all
that's
have
not
that
what happens.
Size 6 pair of jeans, right?
Exactly. And somehow, you know, it'll motivate me. But it won't. All it is screaming at you, you're fat. And you know, I'm sure everybody's experienced this. When you wear a pair of pants that's too tight, how can you not focus on your body and think, oh, my God, I'm so fat. Oh, my gosh, look at my rolls. You know, it's like this running commentary. But the next day, wear a pair of pants that fit, and, you know, you may have some stuff because you've got body image challenges, but a lot of that's going to go away. So I don't want your clothes to be telling you that you're bad or fat or something's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. As well, when you wear clothes that you love and that fit, you're going to feel good. It kind of reminds me of going to the salon. You know, I go get my hair cut, and the person who cuts my hair, he's great at styling my hair. It always looks good. You know, he's a professional. He can get all the way around my head. And I walk out of there just feeling, like, really beautiful and really great. And so that's the intention here. Put on something you love. Dress up and go to the grocery store and feel good about what you're wearing. And you don't have to 100%. You know, this is just about, in a way, it's fake it till you make it. At least give yourself the chance to experience, you know what, I look good. I feel good in what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you and I had a brief conversation about this, but, and also it feels like such a losing battle, particularly, we've been talking about how men's clothing might have this starting to happen as well, but particularly in women's clothing, sizes change so much from store to store that if you're relating your self-worth and your value to what size pants you have, it's going to be tough because in this store you're a size 8, in this store you're a size 12, you know, you didn't gain weight walking from one store to the other.
And what I tell people about that, and that's the next step, is to get rid of the clothes or clothes that don't fit or that you don't love and go shopping. and find things. And what I and which can be really scary for women. But what's important, and I want all of you to know, is all the only reason the size ever matters is so that you can walk into the dressing room with something that's likely to fit. That's it. It's a way to, you know, it's so that you don't get something that there's no way it's ever going to fit, and why bother putting it on? Your time is more valuable than that. So that's all that matters. And you're right. The clothing, you know, vanity sizing, isn't that what they call it? I don't know. Those are just tricks, and they leave you feeling bad about yourself, but they're just the, you know, fashion tricks to sell. Anyway, so the size doesn't matter. It's not about who you are. What's important only is that you feel good in it, you love it, that it fits. Mm-hmm. And bring a friend with you so that you can get another opinion about it. I had one client, actually. She took a friend shopping, and she'd never had a good experience shopping, so this is really scary for her. But I told her, find a friend that you really like and that you trust and that's, you know, that's kind. And so she did, and they went shopping. She had a great time. And even got home, and her friend had to leave early, so her friend said, take pictures and, you know, send me the pictures of what you chose. And so she did. She took pictures of all the outfits, and which brought up some other feelings, which was great. She felt those feelings. She had those and really got a very healing experience around this for the very first time in her life. So, and she bought a bikini, too, for the first time forever. Yeah, so it's really great. And then to wear those clothes and show them off, and it's a treat for yourself, and you all deserve that. Mm-hmm. And I promise, no matter what size you are, when you feel great in your body, people are drawn to you, and you look beautiful, and you are beautiful. You know, it's just when we feel bad about ourselves or in our body, that's when, you know, people are not drawn to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say the other side of wearing clothes that are too small is sometimes we end up wearing clothes that are just too big. We think we can hide and cover up in that. And so really, you know, I went through this, I think, probably about 2 years ago and really just went through and said, okay, like, how do I want to express? I stopped thinking of clothes as being a representative of my size or my shape, but a way of me expressing my character. And I did a little kind of a vision board for my fashion self, my look. And, you know, there were pictures of Audrey Hepburn, and there was, you know, certain colors and a certain feel. And what that did for me is, yeah, when I went out to the store, I stopped feeling overwhelmed and scared by all the choices and then what, you know, what size and what shape and all that. And I just started thinking about, like, when I pick up this shirt, does it make me feel or does it express something about me that I want? Yeah. And, my whole wardrobe changed.
Yeah, yes. Yes, okay. And that's what I've heard from my clients. I'm wearing colors, and I haven't worn colors in years, and I went to the store in a, you know, a sleeveless shirt, which I never do, and they feel really good about just caring about what they want rather than afraid of what everybody else is going to think.
I love that.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So then, step five is wear clothes that fit and you love, and then step six is get rid of those clothes that you don't love or that don't fit. What's step seven?
Step seven is to ditch your scale. Just get rid of it. You don't need to weigh yourself. The doctor doesn't need to weigh you. The scale is only a box of numbers that tells you, at least at this point, how to feel about yourself. And that's all a scale is.
I love this step. At first, I was skeptical, and then I've been trying it for like a week. I'm like, you know what? No scale.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put it away, and man, you're so onto something. So tell us more.
Yeah. All the scale is a way to tell you how you feel. It's an evaluation of your self-esteem, and it means nothing. So letting go of that, you know, of course it'll bring up that – mostly, I think, kind of this fear of being out of control.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and especially when you're doing these steps and you're, you know, a lot of people actually tell me, I know I'm gaining weight. And I would challenge that. I think the fear of gaining weight is so strong that you're looking for any evidence that it's true.
Mm.
And the scale seems to be the best place to go for that.
Yeah.
But you know that when you get on the scale and you've lost a couple pounds, it's like, woohoo, suddenly I'm good. I'm better. I'm, you know, people are going to like me. And you may not be totally conscious of that thought, but that's what's going on.
Right.
Like your self-esteem is. Yeah, exactly. But then you, if you get on the scale and you gain weight, then it's like, I'm bad. I'm worthless. You know, I'm failing.
Yeah.
And all it is a number. And it doesn't mean anything about your health either. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that tonight, but I just want to throw it out there. The BMI scale is bogus.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
It's two numbers, your height and your weight. That's supposed to tell you how,
right.
what your health is.
Oh, right. Take into account all sorts of other important factors. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So I absolutely believe in health at any size, and it's a movement. You can look it up if you're interested, if anybody's interested, but anyway, so your weight is meaningless. Even when you go to the doctor, just say no to being weighed. And most of the time now, I've been doing this for years, and more I don't get any flack for it. Most of the time they're like, okay, no problem.
Wow.
Yeah, but it is really scary. But it's standing up for, no, this is what is right for me,
mm-hmm.
and I don't need to do what you think. You know, because doctors are authority figures, and so sometimes we tend to do what they say, but everywhere in your life. So this is about empowering yourself to say no.
Yeah. I really love this, Anne. You know, I have always had a kind of a muscular build in some ways, and so
mm-hmm.
I always weigh more than what people think I weigh.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you get on a scale and you go, what? How can that be? Like, I don't
mm-hmm.
feel that weight. I don't, like, my body feels good. I feel comfortable. And so then you start punishing and dreading, you know, like dreading
mm-hmm.
that, getting up in the morning or once a week weigh-in and all
mm-hmm.
of that. And I took this one on this past weekend, and it is really
oh.
amazing when you stop, like having that digit in your head and you just start noticing
mm-hmm.
like, how does my body feel today? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, do these clothes feel a little tight? Well, okay. Then,
mm-hmm.
you know, either I'm going to ditch them because like you said, you get rid of the things that don't fit
mm-hmm.
or it's like, oh, you know what? I can choose some things today that are going to help me kind of regulate.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, as you go along, there may be a time where you, and this is very common, kind of feel like, oh, my gosh, I need to get on the scale. I need to check. And so that's great because what that tells you is you're feeling uncomfortable or bad about yourself. Somewhere your self-esteem is being challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're trying to do is feel better about that by jumping
right.
on the scale.
Right.
But instead, stay with that feeling. Yeah.
Okay, got it. All right, so everybody, toss those scales. Throw them out.
Yeah.
Okay, step number eight.
And actually, before we go into step number eight, I actually want to go back to the closed step because I have an invitation for everybody. And that is at least one time, you might want to do it more, but at least one time, go out in the world, dress, you know, in something that you feel great in, that you love, that fits. And then go out in the world and feel and act as though and just take on the feeling of I am hot. People
nice.
Are looking at me and saying, ooh, girl, you look hot. Just, and fake it till you make it. Just bring that place up where you do feel that way, even if it's a tiny little bit. And what you'll notice is your posture takes on that position. People probably will notice you. And if they do, if anybody looks at you, or just assume that they're looking at you saying, wow, she looks
fabulous.
Great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's really great. So I invite all of you to do that. And you might get addicted and want to do it more. I had someone laugh at me saying, oh, my gosh, that'll never happen. But sure enough, she... she loved it, and she did do it more. And another client, she just did it in her living room first and didn't think she'd ever do it again. But a few days later, found herself in the parking lot, walking up to the store, just going, I'm hot. And anyway, so it's really great. And what it'll show you is that your feeling about yourself it's all about you. You know, that you can choose to feel great in your body. And, you know, it's not always that simple. All those feelings get in the way, too. But try this. I think you'll like it.
I like that. Yeah. And if you're out there listening and you have an experience that you want to share, then please, you know, email that to me or Anne. And we'd love to hear your experiences with that exercise that she's just given you.
Absolutely.
So, good. And speaking of exercise, step number eight.
Yes, so step number eight is about exercise, and of course, exercise is, you know, I believe in health at any size. You can be any size and be healthy. Dieting is not what makes you healthy. Being thin is not what makes you healthy. And studies do show this. Again, I'm not going to get into it. It's a whole other talk, but hopefully you'll just trust me on that, although I know it's different than what you've been told. Anyway, however, exercise is important for health. And I don't think anybody will refute that. However, you don't need to exercise a lot for it to be healthy. In fact, people that I work with, and my guess is all of you, can relate to either being an over-exerciser or an under-exerciser. And that's because, obviously, we have this belief in our culture that, you know, you have to exercise to lose weight, or if I eat that, then I have to exercise it off. You know, it's
right.
Such a common belief. But I really want you to separate those two, because you can eat whatever you want. You're not bad or anything for eating, you know, whatever you want, and you don't have to punish yourself in order to justify it.
Okay.
Exercise is not about getting rid of something. It's about giving to yourself what your body wants and craves and needs. It's about self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Your body wants to exercise. It wants to move. And it doesn't have to be exercised. It can be play and fun, and it should be. In fact, this step is about only doing exercises that you love, that you enjoy, that you want to go and do. So that's really important for this, especially if you're an under-exerciser.
Okay.
Now, the two categories. So if you tend to to over-exercise, you exercise too much, you do it because you need to get rid of what you've eaten, you know, as a punishment, your step in this is to rest, is to not exercise. So if you exercise 5 times a week, take a day off, and instead of exercising, sit on the couch and feel whatever comes up. It'll probably at first sound like a lot of criticism. Maybe you'll recognize it as someone's voice, your mom or your dad. Or, for example, I had a client whose mom would tell her she had to go for a jog and then follow her in the car as
oh
she did
goodness.
This. Yeah, so as you can imagine, she doesn't like to exercise now.
No, not really, yeah.
Yeah, so sit on the couch, and as you sit and do nothing, if you're an over-exerciser, you're probably going to have a lot of feelings about that. So feel the feelings. And if you tend to under-exercise, there's a lot of reasons for that. And my guess is, actually, sexual abuse trauma is an element of people who resist exercise. So my guess is that a lot of people listening experience that. So for you, first of all, take as much time as you want not exercising and feel those feelings. But then at some point, you're going to want to exercise because our bodies want to move. And it doesn't matter what you do. All that's important is that you do something, that you walk around the block if that's where you want to start, and then you'll find something that you enjoy. And even if you don't want to, do it anyway. And then let yourself, you know, experience what feelings come up. You know, for this person I mentioned, you know, it was a lot of feeling bad about herself and not good enough. And so, you know, working through that from her mom being so punishing around exercise was really important so that she could get to a place I want to do this. I enjoy walking, and it's fun for me.
Okay, got it. Right. Yeah, and can you say a little bit more about the connection between under-exercise and sexual abuse, like why that's the case, why people who've been sexually abused tend to under-exercise?
Yeah, definitely. One is exercise, let me give you an example, actually, of a client. She overheard, she was sexually abused as a child, and she overheard a couple of boys, she was fairly young, talking about a fat girl, you know, we wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
And that very moment she stopped exercising, she intentionally gained weight. She just didn't want to have any kind of sexual attention at all, and that was her way of solving that. It's also that movement can bring up a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, they're wanting to avoid the feelings that get triggered by the movement.
Right, like and really so being in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay, so stop moving if you're moving too much, and get up and move a little if you're not moving at all.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Got it. All right.
And do what you love, which is really important, because this is about having fun and wanting to do more of it, not about a punishment.
Good. What's your exercise of love? What do you do?
I love yoga.
Yoga. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine's dancing.
Yeah, awesome. Love it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And it's hard to believe we're here at the end at step 9.
Yay, step 9. Okay, step 9 is my absolute favorite one. This is actually the one that my mentor and friend told me to do that I mentioned in the beginning. You know, do this and eat whatever you want, the two combined. And it's just an incredible step. It's my favorite one. Because what it teaches is boundaries. And if anybody has questions about boundaries at the end, please ask me, because I know, and I'm sure you talk about it a lot too, Rachel, but, you know, boundaries are, they help us to feel safe. Mm-hmm. We know where the line is. We know when it gets crossed. We know when other people cross that line and where it is. It helps us to feel safe. And this step is all about that.
Okay.
It's also about abstinence. So if you're an alcoholic and you decide, I can't do that anymore, it's killing me, and you stop drinking, it's very clear. You are drinking or you're not drinking. But with food, it's a little more challenging, right? I have to eat to survive. So people get stuck with this a lot. And actually, I think it's better to be a food addict than an alcoholic, because alcoholics can never drink again if they choose that route. But we can always eat. I can always have a piece of cake. But this step, the way to bring in abstinence is through this step, and that is to eat 3 meals a day and nothing in between.
Okay.
Now, a little caveat, it can be 4, it can be 5, even though I don't necessarily recommend that. It just depends on your body and your metabolism and your lifestyle. But the important thing is to pick a number and stick with it.
Hmm.
Because what this does is gives you a boundary. This is mealtime. And the rest of the time is lifetime. It's feelings time. It's relationships time. It's the stuff that happens when you're not eating.
Mm.
And it also really helps with the, you know, going back to eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. If you eat 3 meals a day and you take care of your, you know, hunger needs, then you're going to, you know, in other words, you eat enough protein to last for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. Then you're going to be hungry again when it's time to eat.
Got it. Okay. So it's so now I know people with like busy lifestyles and things that are going on, it can be really challenging to have like, okay, this is my meal time every day. So is it about eating at a particular time every day, or is it more about, well, even if I have lunch at 3 o'clock, that's my lunch. And then I have my dinner, and maybe dinner's at, you know, 7 o'clock sometimes. Maybe it's at 8, maybe it's at 9. But really just being very conscious about the number of meals that you're having.
Exactly. And it is about planning, and it's about taking care of your needs and, you know, what works in your life. And really, and so at first, people really kind of plan for this. It's like, okay, I'm hungry, you know, at 8 in the morning, so I'm going to eat breakfast then. And then I go to work, and my lunch is at noon, so I'm going to eat enough at breakfast so that I'm hungry at noon. And then, you know, dinner is usually around, you know, 6 o'clock. And so they kind of think about it and plan for it. And a lot of that is because it's scary to do this. Like, well, what if I don't eat enough? And people do tend to eat too much at first until, and it's, and the planning is just about learning, too. It's not about being critical. Oh, I blew it. It's just about, okay, it's, you know, paying attention and learning. You know, okay, that didn't work. What can I do differently the next day?
Okay. So it's really about cutting out that in-between meals, kind of grazing, snacking kind of stuff. Okay.
Yes. Which is often emotional eating.
Right. It's not even really about being hungry. But if you're somebody, for whatever reason, because your blood sugar levels, you really need to kind of have food a little bit more often throughout your day, you just decide that. You say, okay, I'm going to have, you know, 4 meals, and that's my number, and that's what I'm going to do. And then you stay committed to that and notice, okay, when it's not that time, this is a no food. I love that. This is a life relationship being time. I love that. When it's not food time, it's life and relationships and being time. That was great.
Exactly. Okay. It becomes really clear. It's like, okay, I'm wanting this food, but I know I'm not hungry. What's bothering me?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's also saving, you know, food. Like someone at work brings in donuts and you really want a donut, but it's not your mealtime. Grab a donut and set it, you know, somewhere where you can have it with lunch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a way to take care of yourself and your needs, but also having a boundary around it.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I think is so key in that, I'm sure you run into this working with your clients as I do with mine, is really it's learning to be able to trust yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to know that when you say, this is what I'm going to do, this is where my line is, that you can follow through with that. And how that really helps to build that confidence. And again, going back to that choice that, you know, it's really about what you want to be choosing.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in and joining us today. I hope you gained so much from our conversation with Ann today. And remember that you can always visit rachelgrantcoaching.com to learn more about sexual abuse recovery coaching and to explore the other resources available on the site. And please be sure to subscribe to the podcast. We have so much more to share. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, take good care of you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.